Light years is so fucking crazy to me. It's so crazy. Light years is so fucking crazy to me. It's so crazy.
Ethan doesn't even do the radio Ethan anymore. It's not a... Had to get retired at some point when you became an author, so I respect that.
Yeah.
I did feel like you never really liked doing Radio Ethan.
Well, it might
be my projection.
No, it did become one of those dance clown dance kind of situations. Mm-hmm. I liked being in control of it, where I would go into it sometimes, but at a certain point I lost control of it, and I would go in the Lebatard show and he would go, I want to talk to Radio Ethan right now. It's like, I want to have control over how I speak. How about that? Right. I don't want to be Frank Caliendo. You know, I would like to just talk like a normal human being sometimes. Maybe I'm being a...
Well, it also becomes like a shtick, right? Then you become known for that. And it's like,
do the radio. But here, I don't know. The thing is, it never got big enough to legitimately threaten to envelop me. Because it's polarizing. A lot of the people, I think, just don't like the sound of it. But if it was
it's also like too inside.
Yeah.
Get a Count the Dings event going. It's not doing it for the masses beyond that.
Definitely. Well, yeah, if it was a little more popular, maybe if I was more talented, I would be fucked. But I don't know. It hurts my voice. There just aren't many opportunities nowadays to do it because the kid needs to nap. And so, yeah, but I liked it for what it was.
It's not one of your accomplishments on the little inside leaflet part of the book where people list like Ethan went to Berkeley, invented Radio Ethan, started covering the Warriors.
Yeah. But then, so, you know, what's weird is that radio guys tend to know about it more so than I would think. Because it's very inside, but every now and again I'll be on a radio show, or I did the Nick Wright's show, his TV show, and he in the little pre-show brought it up, and they all think I'm taking a shot at them. I mean, he was being good natured about it. He was joking around, but I've had various really Damon Bruce, like. Mm-hmm. Somehow they've heard of this and feel implicated by it.
What is radio
aimed at them? Like, as opposed to like the nondescript, like Mike Francesa.
Yeah. Well, it's not. I'm not an East Coast guy. You know, it is a more of a West Coast, because when I was growing up, everybody in that market wanted to be Jim Rome. I mean, it's not even Jim Rome. It's the voice in my head of a thousand Jim Rome imitators who were just on sad San Diego radio trying to make it.
What is Jim Rome doing nowadays?
And like, what does he do? Does he still do the smack off where like the guys call in and just try to do their best radio guy impression? It's like the actualized version of like all of that combined into one.
Yeah. Well,
you know, Sam and I had our radio show, you know, for a while.
What happened?
And that, well,
I think they're trying to keep their full-time employees employed. So we're
and not us. It was also the Warriors sucked. It was like almost me and Sam went in there. We talked Niners and stuff for like the last month before we stopped. And it was just like, well, it's Warriors radio.
We were still doing Niners. It's really just the pandemic where they're like, we're not really, cause we were considered, like contributors, not full time. Yeah. So they're like, we're cutting the contributors down because we don't know if we can even get the full time people.
We got fired from 95.7 the game. So there you go.
Speak for yourself.
It's a tough scene. I mean, I don't know what these guys are talking about, especially people like Colin Cowherd, where he has to self generate the content. Who knows what he's talking about right now?
We know what they're talking about tomorrow.
So you have herd immunity.
That's not bad. Maybe you can get your own show. By the way, Ethan Strauss. We didn't even do an intro yet. So, but everybody knows Ethan. Everybody's happy. You know, it's our highest downloaded pod of the year. It's gonna beat out MT. You know, it's going to be, it's a whole thing. People love when you come on.
You guys even want to know, like, because I would never tell your MT which one of you technically got more downloads.
So. I don't mean to offend you guys. I don't think either of us would care.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying not to offend either of you. So that's why I'm keeping it to myself.
We wanted to do well. Like, we wanted to have a good pod. That's what we're here for. It's all about the process over the results. We want to have a good
time. I'm a numbers guy. Big LeBron.
I will say our most downloaded podcast of the season was the one the day after the Andrew Wiggins trade.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It kind of points to, you know, you can bring on whoever you want, but ultimately the team's going to
Even on that pod. Remember that? I was in Japan.
I mean, if you look at the reviews, they're saying Ben was a refreshing voice as a replacement for Andy.
Wow. Yeah, well,
you know,
no, I here's what I want.
I'm okay with that.
I just want whoever's listening to have a good time. That's all I want. If you're listening, good time. We don't have to be competitive about it. It's a crazy situation currently.
I just watched Jordan break down in tears over his competitiveness. So we have to all be competitive at this moment.
That's true. That was insane. That was crazy.
That was the best episode yet.
Because it was so out of nowhere that he would get choked up over that. And I wonder why. And additionally, I wonder if it's all false. Not Jordan being the way he is, but the idea that he needed to be that way for the Bulls to be good. Jordan left and that team won 54 games. I don't know if they needed Jordan standing on their neck, ridiculing them all day, every day. I just think that was part of the demon inside Michael Jordan that made him Michael Jordan. I don't know if that was so necessary to making the Bulls the Bulls. Now, somebody could say you weren't on the Bulls, shut up. They'd be right to say it. But I do think that it's maybe a cleave point between Michael Jordan and one Steve Kerr. The idea that basketball needs to be the movie Whiplash and everybody needs to be completely immiserated in order to succeed. I don't know if the current coach of the Golden State Warriors buys into that philosophy, and I think he's trying to do something different.
So that was actually something I wanted to. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here that you can.
It's my show now.
I'm all for it.
The Ethan Cowherd show. Sorry, I'm addicted to Cowherd.
Let it ride. I mean, I guess the other before Sam goes on his point is, if MJ's the guy, obviously the guy that gets him to six titles, and that's how he becomes that great. Then it's like, well, you kind of can't fault him for doing it.
Yeah, nothing's
right. It's like whatever the fuck he does. Yeah.
But you lost to Orlando, Mike. You lost to Orlando. We're never going to let you forget. Yeah. No. I wonder
if that kind of relentlessness and grinding on people is more important for the second and third one, like later on when people are letting up. That's kind of how I've always seen it, because like you can point to the opposite, which is like the Tim Duncan, stoic, consummate, steady leader. They never repeated.
I've got a take. Maybe getting Dennis Rodman was more important than that. I don't know. Look, who knows? Maybe. I mean, it's hard to deny Michael Jordan. He's Michael Jordan. I just wonder.
It's just about the talent on the team.
Well, maybe it's what was necessary to win those championships, but I could understand the resentment from the role player perspective, because you're putting me in a position where now I'm playing to appease you and to not have you ridicule me, as opposed to just playing for myself and trying to just survive in the NBA with the pressure that's already there. It just seems like, I've never had a conversation with Kerr about whether he likes Michael Jordan, but have you ever gotten the impression that he likes Michael Jordan? Have you ever gotten that impression from anything he said?
No, it's more of a respect thing. He always kind of just talks about his.
Well, he knows that Michael Jordan has a lot to do with why we know who Steve Kerr is, right? That's a funny thing. But to what you're saying, it's interesting. There's something to the cumulative effect of the NBA that really does cause relationships to fray in that way. And that was my take. I had this funny take watching it, which is this was the zenith of the NBA in many ways, but you could also see the seeds for its decline, because Michael Jordan is literally quitting because he just can't go through the grind of it again. The season is too damn long. It wasn't just too damn long.
He was able to pull the Costanza and leave on a high note, but ultimately the same concept as
he was, but the idea that he were, you know, and there's a lot going on when he retired in between, but he was burnt out before that. And the season didn't just get too long the day the Spurs decided to start load managing.
Right.
It's been too long. It was too long back then. And Michael Jordan was just able to persevere, and we love it, but you can see it's almost something that's hurt the NBA going forward. I know I've hijacked your show. I apologize. Yeah, I apologize. It's been a lot of Mother's
Day. There's no agenda, Ethan. There's no agenda.
You can talk about whatever the fuck you want. Texting us all day, pushing back the start time, trying to wear us down to take over the show.
Well, I had to start drinking.
Honestly, doesn't it?
I had to start drinking, you know? You start with your Mother's Day mimosas, and you just keep going. And, you know, that's why I need the extra time to get properly in the right mode for it. No, it's like I watched this documentary in absolute awe of Michael Jordan, in awe the whole time. There's something so captivating about him. He's just fascinating. It's incredible to see this footage of him from the 1990s. And at the same time, I've got that little creeping myth busting inclination that pops into my head where I start asking questions of, really, like a baseball body? Like that's why you couldn't win? You got a baseball body. I grew up in San Diego watching Tony Gwynn. I don't know about this whole baseball body that you need, what is it, 2 years to completely recalibrate and rebuild the machine? Or did you just lose to the Magic?
I don't know.
I get
the feeling Tim Grover is going to try to sell us some workout DVDs at the end of this whole thing.
It's just a lot of MJ propaganda, but that's not different than anything else that happens in today's media climate.
We want the MJ propaganda. We want to be propaganda.
It's a moot. I mean, did you hear the music that's going on at the end of each episode? I thought I was watching some off. I thought I was in the theaters. I thought I was at IMAX. The pounding, incredible.
The violins. I mean, woo! Oh my God. They set up that episode against the Pacers. A Pacers team nobody actually thinks is that good, by the way.
Reggie is some like evil villain. We're gonna get them. Yeah.
yeah. We could push him into retirement. We could push him, that Pacers team, and you see sweaty, flabby, absolutely goddamn cooked Chris Mullin in the background.
I did see that. I was actually like, whoa, is that Chris Mullin? I mean, I didn't watch the Swan Song.
Chris Mullin completely washed, barely a rotation player at that time. And you think,
really bald.
Well, you think two things. You think, number one, Reggie Miller, in my opinion, underrated, true superstar, not thought of as a superstar because our conception of a superstar doesn't include off-ball shooting, especially back then. But
didn't pound the ball for 20 seconds at the top of the key or in a post-up position.
It is funny. It is funny the way he's thought of. That guy came up huge again and again. Off-ball shooting destroys defenses. He kept making deep run after deep run. You look at the talent Reggie Miller played with. That guy's a true superstar, but yeah, not a great Pacer team. I mean, you know, come on. Like we're supposed to throw rose petals at your feet for beating. I don't know.
The late 90s, by the way, were the end of the so you grew up on 90s basketball the same way I did. And just like this idea that like, oh, you need a Dale Davis or a Charles Oakley at power forward. Like,
yeah,
it's just kind of an irrelevant position. Like they serve no purpose other than screening and fouling.
I mean, I think that they served a purpose. I think that defensively they were important back then.
Sure.
But yes, they would be replaced by an absolute wuss of a power forward that shot 40% on threes, and the team would probably be
they'd be playing like 15 minutes a game off the bench at center.
They'd
be better for it. So
look, it was a simpler time, man. We didn't know if Y2K would destroy the world because we didn't know how to shift a few numbers over. We didn't know that three was more than two. It was a tough thing. You had to be tough. That's what we knew. That's all we knew back.
I did not see that coming. I didn't see a Y2K thing coming midway through the podcast. But
you don't remember. We're remembering. You know, it's all coming back to me. You know?
By the way, don't come in here and ruin Sam's. Okay, he has a whole MJ the GOAT, you know, agenda that we're going to do every week. Ethan, please don't. Yeah,
no,
okay.
No. Michael
keep that
Jordan,
up. Keep that up.
Look. Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. He just is. There's nothing you can say that makes it go away. And people try to make these arguments and like, well, statistically on Basketball Reference, you know, LeBron, I know I'm that guy usually that people are making fun of with that voice, but I'm just telling you, no one has ever been that guy the way Michael Jordan was that guy. That has not happened. The only time it even briefly happened was Steph's rise that did get derailed, where we were seeing, oh my God, what is this? Right. What could he turn into? But that the object of obsession, the entire world being invested in your narrative, the coming back from leaving with the baseball, I mean, there's just nobody who's had all of that. It's a gestalt. It's everything. It's absolutely everything. And I don't know if an athlete in our lifetimes has even been close, let alone a basketball player. It's
just the mystique of the double retirement unbeaten.
It's something LeBron James will never, ever have. He'll never have it. And look, if somebody wants to make the argument that LeBron James is a better basketball player or created more wins for his team, I think that's a perfectly legitimate argument. But we also have to concede that he will never be that. And that's okay, because that's a once in a lifetime thing. That's a once in a lifetime thing. Who could blame anybody for failing
on the once in a lifetime? I think one thing I wanted to get into with you is this is the first episode we've gotten like more than like a 5 second clip of practice footage. We got like a decent montage there. It's still kind of just a cut up montage, but going into the story of punching Steve Kerr in the face, the thing that stuck out to me was Phil Jackson immediately kicked him out of practice.
Yeah.
Does that even happen? Do they even practice to the point where a fight happens in 2020?
And like Steve Kerr's bleeding on the ground and somebody from the team comes, Steve, we're worried about your mental health.
I mean, and then secondarily, it just got me thinking, like, can you even coach like that? Like, is there
Phil Jackson was also a man of considerable gravitas that,
right,
maybe he's once in a generation kind of coach where there's something intelligent about him, but also severe and a little scary. He's almost like if Logan Roy was a giant hippie, and that is unusual. And so maybe Phil could do things that couldn't ordinarily be done. I see what you're saying. You know, I see what you're saying, that maybe that wouldn't happen in the modern NBA, but I feel like if Phil Jackson was still coaching, he would be doing that. That's just my instinct, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking from the perspective of, like, you know, everything's player empowerment and whatnot. And there's kind of the, you know, it ties into what you wrote about for a considerable part of your book, like the, you know, the player has the ability to leave whenever they want.
Well,
and that leads to people, you know, yeah. Like, could you imagine Steve Kerr could never have coached Kevin Durant in this capacity?
I don't think so. I mean, everybody was walking around on eggshells. I was at practices where you could see everybody waiting around for Kevin to get done before they would go to the bus in a way that they would not for other people. And some of that is particular to Kevin, but I don't think it leads to happiness ultimately. I mean, people think that more power will do it and they seek more power, but we like boundaries, right? And it can be helpful to have boundaries. You can excel better if you have less of a role for yourself. If somebody is telling me that you need to kill it doing thing one and thing two, I am more likely to be able to kill it doing thing one and thing two than if you say, oh, we're adding five more things that are now within your purview. And I don't know if people necessarily benefit from suddenly being their own coach. You know, I think one of the lessons of this, Michael Jordan is a vicious competitor and he certainly has an ego, but he might have tremendously benefited from just ceding some authority to the coach and focusing on the basketball. That might have been quite helpful to him, I think.
It just seemed like this might be hindsight bias, but at a certain point he just started trusting Phil and it was less contentious and it was more like he was an extension of him.
Yeah.
Or they worked in tandem together, which is ultimately, I think, what a coach wants with their star player.
Yeah. And he lucked out in that he got a great coach, but you know, he was like that with Dean Smith and he was like that with lesser coaches and with Doug Collins. And there was this idea of, okay, I'm going to support the coach. We are going to be a stronger team for my supporting the coach. And I think there's something to that. I think LeBron, though, is so goddamn good. Right. That it hasn't been necessary. I mean, it could have helped those teams. It could have helped certain teams.
He raises the floor more than any player ever. Like you can, he doesn't need a coach to get you to the second round and 50 wins.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think with LeBron, it wasn't necessary, but you do wonder if certain situations could have been helped if he was that kind of guy. But that's, again, who knows? I mean, it's kind of a miracle.
It's a floor versus ceiling argument. Yeah.
It's a miracle that LeBron James, effectively having been a child star, it's just a miracle that he's not a maniac. It's a miracle that he is a fairly functional person within these organizations, despite all the stories and despite all the firings. I mean, you have to respect the track record and not take that for granted as well. But I will say, as much as we in the media, I do think is an overcorrection to how he did things in the past, almost cheer players on for accruing more and more power, I think there are pratfalls to that. You know, just like, as Jordan says, winning comes with a cost, so does power. It can trip you up. It can create issues.
Well, and that gets what
is Lou smiling about? What is this smirk? Because people listen.
Sam texted me and said, "Wake up." throughout a podcast, Sam usually texts me a few times just to be like, "Hey, ask a question. Hey, say something." So it's always it's always
Michael,
funny. It's just
who's the Michael Jordan. Look who's the Michael Jordan. Look who's the Scott Borrello.
Oh, of course. And what's funny is I looked through my text thread with Sam, and I just realized that he texted me about four times this morning. Mm-hmm. I didn't respond to a single one with what we were exactly going to talk about tonight.
Well, this is why I don't like to record at 10 p.m. because I wake up before 6. So usually my texts to Andy are at like,
it's a pandemic. You know what? It's a pandemic and you don't have a kid.
Not for Sam.
Construction sites are still working.
Oh,
which means I'm
true.
Still on the call.
Oh man.
Someone has fucked up at 6 a.m. no matter what. So
nobody works harder than Samus Fendiari. Shoot.
It's not that I work harder. It's that my hours dictate that I have to be awake at certain hours. So it's more of a, I've signed up for a life that dictates that my brain functions from like 5:30 to 11.
The MJ of Light Years podcast, by the way, actually, speaking of kind of those relationships, Scottie Pippen, he's got a little Kevin Durant to him. He's got a little,
This is what I keep saying. Kevin Durant is the fusing of Jerry Krause, Michael Jordan, and Scottie Pippen into a human being. That's what Kevin Durant is.
He is all things. Also, as a basketball player, he can do all things. But yes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess that's the MJ part. I mean, just can you imagine someone that good as Scottie? I mean, I didn't watch him, but as I'm looking at this, I'm kind of reading him. I'm like, holy shit, this guy was fucking amazing. Not showing up in a playoff game when it's a do or die situation. If that happened today, he would be. I don't know what would happen, because you got player empowerment that might love it, and then you got you know, other people that might
have all these,
you know.
Of all these tapes, all these people saying he shouldn't have to play if he doesn't want to play.
It's the It's the coach's fault for not getting through to him. But yeah, no, I mean, in 94, Scottie Pippen just deciding to not go in for the last possession is equivalent to like James Harden or Kawhi Leonard. Like, that's the level of like top five-ish player. Where it's just like, yeah, no, I'm mad at the coach. I'm going to sit on the bench now.
Roll out Pete Myers in that position. I mean, that's putting them in a terrible position, too.
Hey, it's former Warriors coach, Pete Myers.
Who would wear bell bottoms in summer league? And it was a great look. And he won those summer league games. Shout out Pete Myers. My favorite of the Mark Jackson assistant coaches who remained among the loyalists. But, he put them in a terrible position because just the defensive attention, I mean – That's incredible that he did that. And at the same time, I don't know, they weren't going to win the championship. They weren't even going to win that series, really, I don't think. I mean, I know it came close and there was the phantom Hubert Davis foul and all that. Yeah, maybe they would. I don't know. I'd have to really go back. Sorry, this was Knicks. I can't remember
who did the Knicks play the following round, because they inevitably lost to Houston. But I can't remember who the Eastern Conference Finals was.
I think maybe the Pacers. I'm trying to remember what happened that year.
I have internet, Knicks, so I will find this out.
The Knicks gave as good as they got to the Pacers, but it's remembered because of that one Reggie Miller moment it's remembered as like the Pacers beating them, I guess, continuously. I say that as a bitter former Knicks fan. So I think it was the Pacers that year. If you
grew up in San Diego, who were you a fan of? Well, you know, back in your fan days,
it's very simple. If you have a Jewish father, he came from New York, and you root for the Knicks. That's how it went for all the other little Jews in, you know, the beach community I grew up in.
It's funny. I had a college roommate from San Diego, from Point Loma, biggest Yankees fan I've ever met.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. It's a thing.
Oh man! All right,
hey, you're right. It was the Pacers, and they went best of it went seven.
Yeah,
Pacers. A lot of Pacers talk. But before we let me do a couple of reads. KJ required reads. Bet online, number one. Bet online. Strauss, you'll like the second one, but let's do the first one first. Currently, no NBA, NHL, MLB. You might think there's nothing to bet on. You'd be wrong. So Bet Online's back. It's been like half a year with these guys, so doing well, even though there's no games. Hundreds of events, games, props to wager on, online casino, poker, blackjack. Bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can also bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, even Nation's hot dog eating contest, all open 24 hours a day, all online. BetOnline.ag, promo code BLUEWIRE. Join today, receive your new welcome bonus. All right, I guess Strauss would like it, but I know Sam loves it. Let's get to the good stuff. Blue Chew. So this is week two of don't roll your eyes. Week two of Blue Chew. Guys, are you looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom or bathroom to another level. They've got the same active ingredients. If you're a shower guy, they've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day, night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost. Once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. It's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com. Get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE, $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE. All right.
Full stomach, huh? All right, so
Sam doesn't believe it. Sam doesn't believe it.
Oh, where are we going with this? Yeah, so let's get to the coach. Let's go to the. I actually want to go back to the coaching, the coachability point. So, I do think I saw someone on FS1 take the opportunity to say LeBron didn't need a coach like Phil Jackson to do what he does, which is an example of why he's better. Just kind of the counter to your point, which is, it's still kind of he won six, so that matters. Do you think in general the coach is just going to continue waning in power in the NBA? Because everything's kind of pointing that way. And I'm watching this documentary, and it's kind of the greatest, I don't want to say greatest like sales pitch, but it kind of points out like, you know, the greatest player of all time actually gained a ton of value from coaching.
Yeah. Well, it's in a way ironic because I believe coaching matters more than ever before, more so than it mattered in the 1990s. And yet the coach's power and authority seems to be on the wane due to a mix of cultural forces and economic forces. And I think the game is so much more complicated than it was in the 1990s. Right. To be ahead of the curve strategically is a tremendous advantage. I do think that Brad Stevens added a lot of value to the Celtics organization. But at the same time, there's just less respect for the coach. And there might have been too much respect for the coach in that way of father knows best, do what the coach tells you to do, let Bobby Knight smack you in the face with a chair over and over again so you learn how to be a man. Maybe there was too much of that. So, yeah, it's a bit of a paradox. Coaching matters more than ever before, and the coach is undermined more than ever before. But that seems to be where we're at right now.
Because it just feels like, and it probably always feels this way, when something's going on and we're clearly in the player empowerment era and everyone's kind of worried that, you know, okay, we signed someone and if something good doesn't happen in the next year and a half, we're already on the clock for them leaving.
Yeah.
Kind of just feels like it's moving in a way that will never get a course correction.
Yes. Yeah. The 1 year deal. And look, the owner set themselves up for this. But yeah, the 1 year deal is a massive power play for the players, which I don't think anybody really anticipated.
Right.
You know, it's, you trade a little something as I wrote in my book, the NBA.
It's owners, a good book.
I appreciate you saying that. The NBA teams, the
top two on Amazon.
The NBA franchises.
What's the other one?
Oh, there's this Shoot Your Shot book that's like all inspirational and people seem to like it.
Wow. It's like two completely different books then.
Yeah. It could be good. I have no idea, but I think what I've written, I guess, is more acerbic. I didn't think about it one way or the other when I said it, but I think that there was this expectation, now that I'm digressing from our topic, that sports books are hooray, hooray, hooray for the most part. Like, yay, yay, yay. And I guess I love that it's kind of dirty. You know, I love.
Right.
I love that there's reality to it, that there's a viciousness to Michael Jordan, that his teammates don't actually like him, and yet you still remember all of this. I like that stuff, but I don't know if everybody likes that stuff. But another
Michael Jordan's teammates sound like all my cousins and stuff talking about, like, just very traumatic experiences, but why it made him a better person.
Well, you need to tell yourself that. It's very
important. That's definitely not a third generation family thing. It's not a second or third gen family thing. They do like, you've got a bunch of like, what's that guy, Wennington, and then you've got like a bunch of other, I don't know if they were, I was texting Sam like, are these guys fucking good? Sam's like, kind of mid. So basically you got a bunch of scrubs up there just saying, groveling at MJ's feet.
The late 90s Bulls always had to have a white, like a white out of shape center on the court at all times, just so, because otherwise they would be too cool. Otherwise the world would explode from just how intimidating and cool they were. So you just needed that. You needed that in place.
It took me until like 15 to figure out that Luke Longley, Bill Weddington, Will Purdue were different people. So, I don't know.
Will Purdue traded.
I mean, they replaced. Robin.
Yeah,
I mean, they replaced Paxson with Steve Kerr, right? Then. By the way, Kukoc, I was hitting Sam with this. My favorite personality. He just seems like he doesn't give a shit. Super cocky, and he's also pretty damn good at basketball. That's my guy. Kukoc was my guy. Played no defense. Yeah. So you know, maybe not,
I almost texted Andy. It's like, Kerr, oh, he's pretty much. He's pretty much Danilo Gallinari. Then I stopped myself. I'm like, well, that's the most stereotypical comp.
then it's Denny Avdija. He's Denny Avdija. That's who it's gonna be. Oh,
Denny Avdija. He can shoot a little better than Avdija. I mean, we could do some draft talk later. I love me some draft.
We'll get some draft talk. Free throw later.
Line is a little concerning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
MT wrote Sadiq Bey. Whoever the is Sadiq Bey a real name? Like, at this point, we're just throwing out make believe prospects at the wall. Unbelievable.
Sadiq Bey is fine, but he's
intriguing. I mean, you'd want the steal and block rates to be a little bit better. You know, it's a little bit concerning. But
the end goal is just Steph, Clay, Draymond, and 9 Villanova players.
Oh, yes. Well, they punch above their weight. yeah. I mean, you know where I'm at. Like, bring Killian Hayes, the next generation, or as I text people in the Warriors organization, the French Cameron Payne.
How did Steve feel about that one? Did he enjoy that one? Is he a big Killian Hayes guy?
That's not a good sales pitch.
Well, I'm sort of fucking around when I say that. I like Killian Hayes. But like, I think
you're
Nate Duncan,
sick for that though.
What?
I said you're sick for saying French campaign. It's disgusting.
No, I love it. He's my favorite prospect. But when I think of, you know, how could this go wrong? How will I be trolled if it goes badly? I think he would turn into, a sort of a lefty, overly reliant on the left hand. He would turn into the French Cameron Payne, and then I would never live it down. But I don't think he will. I think he will turn into D'Angelo Russell with defense. So how about that? That sounds pretty good.
It's a pretty damn good, you know, basketball player.
Let's
what do they like him?
I mean,
do they like anyone?
Aside from Sadiq Bey. Wiseman.
So here's
every
the thing
week
with,
it's a new name.
Here's the thing with the Warriors. I'm always asked about the Warriors. How do the as though there's this man, you walk into the practice facility and there's Joe Warrior, and he is the, you know, the Borg entity who has absorbed the collective opinions.
Like, Andy's vision is Joe Lacob sitting in this golden throne and no one's speaking unless they are pointed to.
I fuck with Joe is his sons. But Joe, yes.
Well, yeah. So I'll say a few things about that. I'm aware of people who have different preferences on players within the organization. That is not the same thing as them having a collective take on who the hell to get. And since they're months away from it, I don't see it as look,
it's,
there are
it's
picks
a decision
that
I can have to make till Halloween.
Yeah, yeah. There are picks. I would be surprised. I'll put it this way. I would be surprised knowing, and my input I don't think matters much because people just know. They just know. You know, you watch LaMelo Ball. Does anybody watch LaMelo Ball and go, that's somebody that Steve Kerr wants in the team? Anybody
see
that?
I'm just surprised they're not playing it up a little more because there are going to be teams who maybe overrate him. And there's, you know, there's a chance to pull the Don Nelson talking up Yinkadare about him. Or maybe, or are we beyond that? Like, no one's going to believe if Steve Kerr gets on a mic and he's like,
you look at LaMelo
Ball. I see it in LaMelo. Yeah.
I really don't get the LaMelo Ball thing is something I don't understand. And that's the other thing. You know, the ways I will be humiliated after this whole draft when it happens 2 years from now, it will be when my beloved Killian
Hayes. Draft,
Hayes,
by the way.
When Killian Hayes becomes the French Cameron Payne, they'll be bad. And when LaMelo Ball wins multiple MVPs, that'll be bad for me because
I see what people see in LaMelo Ball is the same thing they see.
I am one of the few people who watched NBL games regularly, like few people in the United States. I don't know if that I'm not a scout. I don't know if that makes my take any better than anybody else's take. I don't know. I just wonder sometimes if people are basing it off the highlights versus watching actual games of LaMelo Ball playing basketball.
You know people don't watch actual games, Stroud. You know that. Nobody watches actual games.
I'm wondering this guy. I'm watching this guy like not finishing at the rim in the Australian league, which is not a great.
But you know why he's hyped up. It's handling the ball. It's like the Jamal Crawford thing where it looks so smooth. And it's very easy to talk yourself into if this goes in 5% more often and he passes it 5% a little more this way.
Yeah,
like that's an intoxicating
shakes,
player.
But like, when Jamal Crawford's doing it, it ends in a beautiful looking rainbow shot. When LaMelo Ball's doing it.
Yeah. Like 30% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. When LaMelo Ball's doing it, it comes out of his chest, like the alien from Alien. I mean, true. I know I should be one to talk. I've got a shot myself. I'm just saying that the ability to shoot, the ability to score for a point guard is essential in the modern NBA. I mean, how many years of this do we have to watch before we finally get it to our through our heads that it's not a Rajon Rondo league anymore? It just isn't. It isn't. Now,
doesn't it come down to your guy Killian Hayes doesn't exactly shoot it at a high percentage. So it comes down to how much you believe the shot will.
Watch Killian Hayes, watch him shoot. Tell me that guy can't shoot. Like
He's got better mechanics. I'm not going to argue.
He's scraping 90% on his free throws. It's a different thing than what LaMelo Ball's got going on. Look, if LaMelo Ball, if LaMelo Ball fixes his shot, then we're having a different conversation. But when people talk talent, well, the most important talent for a point guard is not the ability to pass. It's actually the ability to shoot.
Does he have a better ability to kind of shake defenders than Killian Hayes? Because I'm not even convinced. I think he's three inches taller than Killian Hayes.
And I don't even know if he's 3 inches taller, if I'm going to be completely real about it. I mean, you watch him standing.
Maybe
next
one
to
and a half, too.
Well, you watch him standing next to guys in the NBL who are 6'5", and I want to see it, not to be a truther. Like, I want to see the actual stats on it. I mean,
a lot of angles with those pictures next to LiAngelo and Lonzo.
I am, by the way, I've convinced myself that Anthony Edwards would be the right first pick. Sadly enough, we are 2 months deep into the quarantine, and I am on Anthony Edwards after spending months just destroying him.
I'm just imagining Andy react to the Anthony Edwards, Andrew Wiggins dribble handoff sequence.
Yeah,
where neither can fucking dribble, but you know,
it's just not the same.
It is funny. It's all choices that have some glaring flaw that terrifies you. I mean, all of them. It's just, but that's why I love it. That's why I love this draft. It's just a Russian roulette with only one chamber empty.
I was going to say Russian roulette, but they're all loaded. I feel like the opposite of Earl Thomas's.
Okay. So I want to get back to this. So you said there, obviously people inside the Warriors have differing opinions and preferences. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I imagine that's not different than most teams. Are they less streamlined than they were, let's say, 5 years ago, six years ago?
Yeah, by circumstance, too. They've not gotten to do their whole process. I mean, they were supposed to... I mean, Steve Kerr was going to...
They should be knee-deep into individual workouts and interviews and everything now, and they're not.
No, and I mean, Kerr was supposed to go out to Europe, and he was going to watch Killian Hayes and Theo Maledon, and that was going to be something that he was going to do, and that's off the table. You know, they had a whole idea of how they were going to do things, and Avdija was going to get scouted more so. I think they were going to maybe send Kent Lake about to Israel or whatever they were going to do. So it's all disrupted by that.
Isn't that just birthright? Huh? isn't he?
Sorry. Okay. That's a pretty good Kent Lakeup's young joke. I didn't expect that.
Sorry.
Oh, that's a fantastic, you know, I wonder, you know what, this is a good question. Is Kent Lakeham young enough to go on birthright? I did not expect us to get here in the conversation, but it is a good question. Man, they didn't let me do anything on birthright. I hated birthright.
How old were you when you went?
What is that? Somebody explain to me what that is.
Birthright, it's this trip that they send.
You would love it if there was an Asian version of it. That's all I'll say.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of it. Yeah.
Well, let me. Okay. This is a digression. So, God.
We love nothing more than.
Well, okay. So, it's this trip where they send you to Israel for free in hopes that you will love Israel and potentially move there to help them win their population demographic war. And so it's kind of like a big advertisement. And there are different, I think, degrees of how fun it is, depending on which group you go with. I went through Berkeley Hillel. I can't remember if it was my junior year of college. I don't know. Super unfun.
So you're 21-ish.
Oh, yeah. Super unfun.
Well, okay. So, I was 21. And, you know, there are two things going on. You know, it's like this is how my brain's always working, where I'm just finding the inconsistency where they're saying, it's safe, do birthright, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe. Come on, it's a bunch of stereotypes on the news of stuff blowing up. It's fine. Come do it. It's going to be great. Then you get there, they go, you cannot leave the group for any reason. You have to stay within two blocks of the group at all times. And I'm thinking, wait a second, I'm 20. Like, at that point, I'm 21 years old. I'm an adult. In theory, in technicality, in my country, I can go anywhere.
Right.
And suddenly I am tethered to this group at all times. We wake up like Sam Esfandiari barking at people in a construction site at 6 a.m. They run us through all these different events. And I felt almost like it was a cult where they're just trying to get you tired and have you never.
Yeah, you were a midsummer. You were in the.
Yeah, it felt very much like that. Yeah, with, you know, absent what happened, you know, at the end of that. It was a crazy situation, and it all culminated. It all culminated at the end in this big. They called it the mega event. The mega event. It was an amphitheater. Filled with 7,000 people, and it was almost like an IMAX screen behind it, and there was just techno music and just flashing lights. It felt very much. It felt very much like Zoolander, like, you know, killed the Prime Minister of Malaysia, sort of like messages. At some point, I swear to God, this happened right here. on the big IMAX screen. And this was an event where I think the Minister of Defense spoke, but on the big IMAX screen, you've got the techno music going and the flashing lights, and there's a dove flying in slow motion at us, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and an Israeli Star of David is flashing on the screen, and it's just going into a techno beat. I am not making this up, by the way. It's going... Israel peace, Israel peace, Israel
oh,
peace.
So they're doing Israel, like a Pavlovian kind of thing where they want to get you like brainwashed. Yeah, really. Into
Israel
a
peace, Israel peace. Wow. I was just like, I was like, I thought I was just going to come here and party. Like, what's going on? What is happening?
Strauss is like, I just want to get laid.
Which, by the way, dash those dreams, because here's what also happens. You go on the Birthright, or at least the Birthright Berkeley Hillel. And I'm sure some of your listeners had better stories, better luck, whatever. But you go on this and you're escorted on your journey by Israeli soldiers who are your age, but are in fatigues and have a gun.
By the way, maybe Denny Adia over the next year.
They're wearing fatigues and they've got a gun and they're in charge of the safety of all the women on the trip. And I mean,
but not the men.
But not the men. The men, whatever. I guess who does a little bit better in that department on that particular trip.
You see, here's the thing, man. Like, I feel like if they have that, they send me to China for a couple weeks. They're not sending me back. I'm stuck there. I'm stuck in China. They're doing the whole.
I'm just having memories of the mega event. They had it set up a little bit because, you know, TRL was in the past and Andy doesn't even know what that is, but it still had that weird format. You had an Israeli Carson Daly, and the way they would do it, they would go with the camera from person to person, and they would, you know, they would do it in the way they would do a TRL music video. Like, hi, I'm Rebecca Stolnick. I'm from Teaneck, New Jersey, and I want to make Aliyah so much. Woo! Israel, woo!
By the way, I have never heard Ethan this excited talking about anything related to basketball. We have this is the my favorite part.
We got like a good few months before we actually have anything relevant in basketball to talk about anyway. So
Birthright.
Well, let's go there actually, Ethan. Our guy Adam Silver is considering all options, and where are you with this? What do you think they're going to do? They seem more focused on not offending anyone than doing anything.
You know, that seems to be that way. There was an interesting quote, I think in one of the ESPN articles on it, which was a GM, anonymous quote from a GM, that it's hard to lead by consensus in a crisis. And so whatever they do, I thought it was an interesting quote. Don't know the GM, but it was an interesting quote. You know, Adam Silver likes to consult with a lot of people and he likes to get everybody on board, and that can be good. But in a crisis, we just kind of want a tyrant.
Top down leadership. Yeah.
Yeah. We just kind of want a tyrant. We're doing this. Yeah. Shut up. Yeah. Tillman Fertitta. Shut up. Shut up. The fuck
shut
off
up
TV.
And shut up and loan me more money.
So yeah, get off TV. Shut up. We're doing this. This is what we're doing. I don't want to hear about it. You know, it's kind
of David Stern.
Yeah. Shut up. Shut up. That's how it would sound if it was David Stern. God, I miss him. Anyway. yeah, some of the things David Stern would not allow on.
It is. I did appreciate them dispelling the suspension myth, because like all it takes is 1 second to realize, like, wait, why would David Stern want to suspend the most lucrative player?
No, it's crazy. Yeah. Michael Jordan could have done myriad of terrible things.
It's like the opposite. If anything, he'd be like, who do I need to get rid of to make this?
Yeah, I know David.
Don't ask me questions about how.
Yeah, I just don't even. It makes no sense as a theory. None. But yeah, So that's an interesting observation, and Adam Silver's a smart guy, so maybe he'll fit to the moment, but I don't understand this idea. And it's funny because I did criticize the NBA, some would say harshly, for how they handled the pandemic at the beginning. But I wouldn't have any problem if they just bought a bunch of tests and tested the players. I don't think that's their responsibility. I think that's the government's responsibility to have enough tests for the citizenry. I don't think that's what a private organization, I don't think, should be beholden to that standard of there are fewer tests if you buy more tests. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
You're saying if they accumulated enough tests to make their bubble city thing work, people wouldn't be like, screw the NBA. They'd be like, Trump, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, why is this not? Why do I not have this in my local town?
I think population of people would be very small and highly overrepresented on Twitter. I doubt you would go into
classic.
I doubt you would go into many virtual sports bars because I guess we can't go into real ones, and people would be up in arms about this. The NBA is hoarding the tests.
Right. Right. Well, or go the other way, right? For me, it's like go one way or go the other way. Just make a fucking decision. If you're gonna if you don't want to deal with the repercussions that come on Twitter or wherever, then just cancel the season. Cancel and say you're gonna start it in Christmas. I don't care which way you go though. Just pick one.
I'm with this, and we could be wrong. It's hard to know, but I do feel as though they need to be saying more sooner. And I think this idea that we don't have to make a choice and we can keep waiting and we can keep going and we can keep, you know, the season's not necessarily over. It's not necessarily over. It's like, you know what? The season is over. Like the season's over. Like there's no, there's something a little off to me about pretending or not making the decision until the last possible moment. You need to give your fans a sense of direction right now.
Literally, because, you know, do what baseball is doing, which is we want to play. We are trying to figure out when it is feasible and if it is feasible.
Yes.
Like people can deal with that. Like no one's going to be upset at the NBA for saying, hey, we would love to play these games. Right. We're trying to see if we can.
Well, yeah, but I also think they should cancel the regular season at least, or say the regular season.
Or just call it, yeah.
This goes back to the tyrant thing. This goes back to the tyrant thing of like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, if you're on the bubble of the playoffs.
Sorry, Portland Trail, but sorry, CJ McCollum.
Yeah, too bad, so sad. It is what it is. It is what it is. And the idea that maybe they would want Zion to get in on it. I mean, look, what's Zion Williams?
Whatever, people are going to watch it.
What's Zion Williams? Body gonna be like after New Orleans.
I was saying I think Jokic and Harden are like the front runners for coming out of quarantine out of shape. I didn't even consider Zion.
I mean, it's a
high risk of injury, actually.
Yeah,
it's risk of injury. Him, it's kind of funny, but it's also
hammies,
like,
the hammy's gone.
It's also
keep
like
him, ooh. Keep him away from the bubble and wrapped in bubble wrap. So I think it's because it's absurd. Like the regular season is over. The Warriors are not acting as though there's a season. You can't just ramp it all back. It makes no sense. So
they're just gonna send Michael Mulder to play 1-on-5.
Holy shit, I forgot Mark Mulder was a guy that was on the team. I totally forgot
on the
about
Mark
Mulder.
On the X-Files. Yeah.
Yeah, wow, that is such a long time ago now.
So
those are always you got to get onto the Facebook groups, because that's where you get like the real fan talk, because
real normies.
I saw someone argue they have to draft James Wiseman because Dragon Bender isn't going to get it done.
I love it. I love it.
Like, these are our two options here.
I love it. I don't have any firm idea though of what the hell, you know, like I don't know the safety. I can't tell you how safe it is. I can't.
Not a doctor.
I don't know. I could certainly, I don't know. The Disneyland idea is appealing to me. It's an interesting one. It makes a certain level of sense, but you have to test
it out. Than Vegas?
Or,
well, it's the same thing, huh?
Yeah, sort of. But you have to test the hell out of it. And so this idea of being worried about having enough tests for the rest of the country, I just don't think can fly. Either do it or don't do it, as we're saying. If you're going to do it, everybody needs to be tested all the time. Like that's just,
I didn't even consider
not just once
what you brought up, but it's true. Like if the NBA got a bazillion tests, the person who would look bad is the government.
Yes.
It's not, you know, I don't know, pick any NBA official. It's no. It's so, I mean, are they really invested in protecting the Trump administration here? I don't know.
Yeah, like Trump gives a shit if they look bad anyway. It doesn't fucking matter.
You know, maybe the devil would be in the details and how they would procure the tests. You know, if a Joe Tsai comes to them and says, you know, hey, well, China hooked up this great deal with China where we can send you 1 million tests that will not be shared with the American public. You know, that could
full
be a PR
issue. Full geopolitical warfare because Joe Tsai hooked them up and Trump's tweeting every day
about America. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I could see how that's just not something you want to deal with.
Yes. I mean, but yeah, you don't. Somebody who knows said something to me, and this is whatever, that Adam knows more than he's letting on, which, you know,
I would hope so.
he's got ideas of what he wants to do. He knows more than what he's letting on. I have a sense to it that they need to have more direction and a bit clearer communication. And I have to say, because I'm the NBA negativist or whatever on these things, I see that as my role sometimes, because I think in the NBA, there's a lot of boosterism and a lot of people have been cheerleading what looks like a decline. And I love the NBA. I love basketball.
Is that unique to the NBA? I think that's every sport too.
No, I think there's more boosterism in the NBA. The NBA is completely, everybody in baseball.
What do you mean?
Has this existential issue where their fans are getting older and the sports are getting less popular.
Okay. Okay.
Like everybody gets it. The NBA, there has been this blindness to it as they've been declining in popularity. And I have concerns that there's not an incredible demand for this season. A lot of the country is kind of tuned out on them. You know, you're out of sight, you're out of mind, you know. You go away, you start playing this game of we can come back whenever and we can just disappear and then we're going to reappear in August and everybody's going to be thrilled. I don't know. You know, the WWE did their thing. It seemed like people weren't that into it. I don't know how into fanless basketball the public is. I don't know how much outside of LA and Milwaukee of an appetite there is to see this all happen. Mm-hmm. So I think if you fade to the background – with this idea of you don't have to make a decision until you absolutely have to, I think there is a risk of people developing new habits. Sports is a little bit dependent on habits. And if you go away for a long time,
I'm a Doosan Bears fan. It's Korean leagues. It's legit.
He's not, by the way, he's not fucking kidding. There's not a single, guy is not.
You love them 88 mile an hour meatballs. You just like that. That's
a little more hit and run, less three true outcomes. I don't know if any of them can hit home runs. So
the bat flips are nice.
But
people learn new ways of doing things. They form new habits. And I think that the NBA for a little while has had issues that are concerning. I won't say existential, but issues that are concerning. So I'm just concerned with this. This sort of arrogance that the league has had, that everybody's just can't wait for us to do our thing.
And but issues, you're talking about like the product itself is.
Well, I'm talking about the whole thing. I'm talking about the whole thing and the way they communicate with the broader public, the way that they seem to not care at all about their goddamn customers, the way that Adam Silver will say, well, 40% of our revenue comes from fans. I know that was a misspeak. I should be a little generous. I guess he meant that 40% from the gate, but no, it's 100%. And
yeah,
you know, there's this sort of,
by the way, 40% from the gate, surprising to me. That's higher than I would have expected.
It's almost like there was a TV rights bubble and all the salaries are wildly inflated based on a ratings boom that never arrived. But that's the other thing, you know, the NBA needs to somehow figure out a way to gin up interest back to where it was and rest itself from this pandemic. I'm not saying that Adam Silver's dumb. He's obviously very smart and I would never want to have his job.
It sounds like a very miserable job to have.
Yeah. There's just something happened with the league where the league is not resonating with the broader American public in the way it used to. And I've not gotten the sense that that any of this has been taken seriously until very recently. And even then, I don't know.
That's what happens when the Players Association gets too powerful. I mean, the whole the myth of player empowerment is that it's better. It's better for the players. It's not better for the public. That people, this happens with all labor negotiations. There's this idea that labor is always right. They may be right in fighting for their constituents. That does not mean it serves the broader public better.
No.
So it's I can want players to have better conditions and recognize that it's not a good thing that every player sits.
Or something else happens where it seems like the top strata of the league has way more power within the union than it used to. The union used to be run by Derek Fisher
and Roger Bell.
Yeah, players like that, right? And maybe they didn't deserve to have so much power. Those arguments were made because if LeBron James is worth, I don't know, $100 million a year to an organization, maybe he should be running things. But then when what ends up happening, and it's funny to me watching it, is you have a situation where, and this is resultant in part from the TV rights bubble and the salaries being completely out of whack and guys fans never have heard of making hundreds of millions of dollars. The owners seem more desperate to recoup their expenses than some of the major players in the Players Association. I mean, a lot of these guys,
even
before they hit 30, who have voices in the Players Association, have fuck you money.
I'm watching CJ McCollum talk about how he's worried about the risk. And I'm sitting here going, CJ McCollum, you've made over $80 million and you have another 120 guaranteed to you, and you're not an all-star. Yes. Like you're living like a kid. You can retire now and you will have made more money than Andy and me combined for the rest of our lives.
This is the thing that nobody can say right now in media, but it's obviously true that the NBA players are overpaid right now. They're overpaid. I'll just say they are overpaid as a collective overpaid. And it's, you know, in many instances in the past, they were underpaid. You hear some of the salaries back
like
in the
Michael
90s.
Jordan. Yeah.
Like Scottie Pippen.
Yeah. $3 million a year. But just if players can be underpaid, they can also be overpaid. And I just mean that on the basis of they're not overpaid in the sense that whatever you can negotiate is your salary, right?
Sure. But
they are in the sense of generating profit for the league going forward. And the crazy quirk of the NBA signing its deal at the height of the TV rights bubble, you know, like that's something that's created conditions where guys like Timothy Mozgov earned just fortunes that would shame the greatest players of a few years before.
I mean, this is a big Kayvon Looney podcast, but Kayvon Looney makes triple what Scottie Pippen made.
Yeah, you know, just for inflation. I mean, come on.
Okay,
yeah,
so only double.
I think also importantly, I mean, to your point, Sam, I mean, yeah, overpaid, but also kind of out of touch. I mean, we're always going to say
that's the more important thing.
Well,
but
the two tend to happen in concert, do they not? Right?
Sure.
I should hope.
Yeah. Owners are always going to be out of touch, but players, like, it's because we see players every day. We got to listen to, like, that CJ McCollum stuff. It's like, yeah, I mean,
I will say with management of the team, they have to be a little more in touch because nothing's guaranteed, but they're seeing a lot of money be lost by games not being played right now. They're not locked into guarantees the same way players are. So there's just more risk is, I guess, the better way to put it. Like if there was more risk on the player side, maybe it would be the same.
Maybe this is good. You know, maybe CJ McCollum having enough money and power to prioritize his health is ultimately good. I mean,
sure. None of us would act different in his position. Let's get that out of the way and make that clear.
It's just an interesting quirk right now where you've got owners seem and broker than players. You've got, you know, whose balance sheet do you want? Who would you rather be right now, CJ McCollum or Tillman Fertitta? I mean, I don't know. Tillman Fertitta's out there with his chest puffed out talking about how much money he has. But if you just ask me which one based on how they're talking, I probably want to be CJ McCollum.
Yeah, I mean, Fertitta has the potential to just absolutely be broke, right?
Where CJ McCollum, and that has nothing to do with the fact that, like, any one of these owners has what, 200 full-time employees plus over 1,000 like day stadium freelance workers, and just having to deal with the constant noise and everything about it. Whereas the player can just kind of be like, yeah, everyone should just stay self-quarantine and stay in their house, not have to deal with like any of the hassle.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, first, we're not defending owners. Second, very important point to say that, no, it's very easy if you don't have any responsibilities as a player or just someone tweeting online to not really understand what, you know, what the fuck people have to deal with to a either get this league started again or to kind of get the league in a place that, like, dude, I love basketball too. Sam loves, like, we all love basketball, and it just really, the NFL has a game this Christmas, which is, you know, kind of the NBA's day. And I bet you if the NBA messes around and doesn't play any games on that day, I bet you the NFL messes with the schedule and puts like four games that day, right? Mm. And then now
the NFL Christmas is going for the NFL. The NFL is going for the jugular. The NFL
exactly.
By the way,
they're going to wipe the NBA.
This is what you risk when you get a little bit arrogant. You get a little bit fat and sloppy and lazy. And to be clear, we said
the irony of Mark Cuban's.
Yeah. By the way,
we said pigs get. What did he say?
Pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered.
Yeah.
That's what agents love to tell their players. By the way, the agents love telling their players that when they want to just sign a deal and not have the player bother them about how that needs to be more money. But
what you're saying about arrogance, though.
No, okay, but I want to get back to some. As we said, the players overpaid. Yeah. To be clear, because it's a BRI split, so too have the owners. So too have the owners of the teams. You know, this is the result of this insane money flood that came into the league on the, you know, as a result of the big TV deal with ESPN, ABC, and TNT, a deal that was so bad, apparently, for TNT that or Turner, that they fired or laid off like 10% of their staff immediately in its aftermath, because that's the other thing, is that they're not the biggest shop or weren't at the time that they did that deal. The owners and owning a team became too easy a way to make money and to cash out. And suddenly you had these crazy valuations of these franchises, and you're selling the Clippers for over $2 billion. And, I mean, that also happened. And I think that, yeah, they got a little bit fat and lazy and sloppy, kind of at a time where the screws were being put to the NFL and all the prestigious writers in the country were talking about how the NFL had next.
Right.
Right. Right. You'd think that the NFL would have become undone of its, you know, immense success. But they had this other strange thing that it hurts the brains of the players. And, you know, maybe people care about that. People wondered, perhaps the public cares about that, but apparently the public doesn't care about that at all.
Do not care.
No one's ever cared.
Nobody. Yeah.
But what the public does care about is Kawhi Leonard choosing a new team every season. Apparently they care more about that.
Yeah.
I do want to, in
a negative way. Yeah.
Let's move this back to one more Last Dance related topic. I want to move this a different way. I wanted to ask you this earlier, but we got side tangents. We had to discuss Birthright
into 20 different, yeah, into 20 different things.
It's two different topics here. One was, I wanted to ask you this last week, but we had Marcus on. The Sam Smith book, The Jordan Rules. You have written probably the closest thing to that in terms of being embedded in a team. And it just walk me through what you felt about all that and kind of the reality of everything he was talking about with the backlash and everything.
Oh, Sam Smith?
Yeah.
Well, my first thought is I had no idea about it. I had no clue. I didn't know. Like, for all I knew, Sam Smith wrote the Jordan Rules, and then, I don't know, he filed the next column, and there was no issue in his life, right, as far as I knew. It makes sense, but I just never really thought about it, because I thought, so much of this is, I guess a lot of what I'm learning from The Last Dance is that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Right.
And that some of these things I've ascribed to the new technology, which certainly amplifies aspects of the culture, but it has always been, it has always existed. And in the case of Sam Smith, it was interesting that there were death threats, and it was interesting that people were angry at him for altering the mythos of Michael Jordan for them. But in the end, as much as Michael Jordan hated the book and as much as Jerry Krause hated the book, I thought it made the Bulls more interesting and it made Michael Jordan more interesting. You know, I've made the analogy that in American Hustle, they're talking about the best perfumes have, I think it's the top coat. There's something rotten in the top coat of it. There's something a little rotten along with whatever's perfumey and citrusy and wonderful. And there's just something a little bit rancid that draws people to it. The idea that Jordan was a hyper competitive asshole while being our hero was an interesting idea. And I think made him more so. And so, yeah, but to bring it back to Sam Smith and the emotions of all of that, I don't necessarily compare or think about what I'm doing in regard to that. I think that's a very unique cultural artifact to that time. And I have an immense amount of respect for it. And I think that we just did things differently. And there wasn't aggregation like there is now. I think aggregation is a massive tax on honesty. And I'm not
Blame Bleacher Report for your book not being more of a bombshell? Is that what we're getting at here? Because, because it is true. Like I feel like Sam Smith wrote stuff that if those Bulls existed today,
yeah,
we would have a better idea that, you know, MJ's maybe ornery, maybe not the best teammate, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Well, he put stuff in there that I just couldn't, like, I've heard similar stuff, but I just couldn't do what he did when he puts the argument between Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, where they're arguing over which of their sons has the largest penis, stuff like that. You probably couldn't do today. I think.
It would why couldn't which you? Is, are you saying you couldn't because, it's just like uncouth, or because you feel like journalistically you can't?
Well, probably. I mean, that's a different conversation. I just think that that would like dominate news cycles and aggregation.
Right.
It wouldn't just be an interesting little funny detail in your book, you know,
like a footnote. It'd be like, oh, this is what Victory Machine is about. Why is KD and
yeah,
and,
yeah, you know, yeah.
You couldn't anecdotally talk about like two dudes talking about their like sexual conquests.
Yeah.
In that way, that would be what the book is.
That would just completely define it would define the book. You know, nobody talks about the Jordan rules as the penis argument book.
The quintessential decision on who is the biggest.
Yeah. That would completely define the book nowadays because it would be excerpted and argued about and aggregated. And so it's different parameters. It's different parameters. And, you know, David Halberstam and the way he wrote in the 1970s about the Blazers, it's just so different. It's so different, but it was interesting to me that he dealt with the level of backlash. It's something I can certainly relate to, but I got to say the difference between it is that Michael Jordan has stands. And had stands, and you know there are people online who, you know, get mad about their perception that it's like trying to tear KD down or whatever.
Right.
Which I don't think if you read the book, I don't think that's what you take away. But maybe there's authority on that. I think it's sympathetic, but just there aren't a lot of people. I feel bad sometimes. Like people will aggregate aspects of the book and they'll just pile on him even more. And so it's also a different. It's a different.
I would also argue the KD parts are maybe the least interesting parts of the book. I mean,
that's because you knew the fucking story.
It's probably hipster Sam told me that, but like almost everybody I talked to says the opposite. Says the opposite of it. But yeah, well, I mean,
we call it Sam Sources. It's a segment. Like
the jury pool is a bit tainted because Sam knows a lot of it. And,
sure. You know, that's the other part that makes it like I don't even know how to tackle what I think is the most interesting because little bits of it have been like shared at different like it doesn't have the like oh wow I didn't consider this, you know.
Yeah. Well, there is this anxiety though where you start wondering like what is the reaction to this going to be and you know is this person going to get mad at me and how is that going to manifest and. I mean, I don't tend to get into that when I talk about it because I don't think readers ultimately or fans ultimately care about my own psychodrama at all my feelings. Nope. So, you know, this is about serving them. It's about creating something interesting for them. But yeah, it is anxiety. It's weird. Like Larry Riley goes on the radio and says the Chris Paul non-trade never happened. And then
I meant to ask you about this. We got like an hour in here.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's people calling Ethan a racist, but my two favorite parts.
Ethan's always gonna be a racist until he changes his skin color. But
now it's gonna be excerpted. Like the context of me saying that the money flood happened because of the TV rights deal, so players got overpaid. It's going to be excerpted somewhere as me saying that NBA players overpaid. NBA.
We can actually pull that.
Machine author calls NBA players overpaid. Yes.
Oh, it would be perfect. It would be. Oh, you're giving us numbers, Ethan. This is what Sam and I live for.
Please don't do that.
It won't be.
Please don't do that. Yeah. So anyway, but then like Larry Riley said that, but then Chris Paul was asked about it and completely confirmed the whole thing. And you're just sort of riding this out. You're sort of riding this out of like, you know, but then you just remember that it's all just kind of fleeting. And I think the whole crazy press conference with KD getting mad at me was a good primer on it, where it all feels really important.
I was just going to say,
it all feels really stressful. And then life moves on.
Can we like, go back to the KD or sorry, the Chris Paul trade? Like it was pretty well reported that the Warriors were willing to trade Steph for Chris Paul.
Didn't
everyone was kind of cool with it because it was
Chris Paul. It was the best point guard in basketball.
Like, I mean, I was mad they didn't trade Steph for Deron Williams because I was like, come on, Steph's nice, but he's never going to be.
It was a guy with one ankle who did some cool shit at Davidson. And this kind of stoner draft pick out of the Northwest that you didn't know that much about. For the greatest point guard in the NBA. I mean, that's the thing. It's hindsight's 2020. I don't think anybody would blame them for floating Steph in various trades. It made sense back then when, you know, Joe had just taken over the team. So, it's not any slight, but, you know, it's the possibilities of trading Steph are cited just to show that the Warriors weren't psychic, right? And there's some luck involved to this whole journey. That's just how it is.
I want to compare that the Last Dance talking about MJ coming back in age 32, or I immediately texted Sam and said, hey, how old was MJ when he came back from retirement? And Sam goes like 31 or 32. And I go, all right, let me go look up Steph's age. And that's kind of the similarity that I would like
I hate to burst your bubble, but it was just kind of an older league back then. It was an older league, I think.
Ethan, please don't do this.
Kevin Pelton will swoop in and demonstrate that I'm actually wrong statistically. And it was a much younger league.
He's good at that.
I don't know. I mean, it's a possibility. But it felt like an older league. It was less physically taxing.
77, 74 scores were disgusting. A lot of those, huh?
It was, it was fun. It was fun. See, you don't know. You don't know. Like
that's the other thing. Every game felt inevitable and ended with like an MJ 12 footer.
Yeah. But like the low
scores. I'm a Kobe Duncan guy, so that's what I grew up.
Here's the thing with low scores. You don't want them too low. You don't want them in those 70s, but when they're the right, you kind of want them around 100. And when there's less scoring, a score feels like a touchdown. Yeah, I feel like you don't want this crazy Houston Rocket shit where it's 150 to 157. At that point, this is just crazy stupid video game stuff. You need that playoff pressure. You need it to have some meaning when somebody scores a bucket. I mean, I don't know. It was cool. I didn't know any better when I was a kid. I thought it was all very awesome. I thought it was all great. I didn't question any of it. So, here's the thing. The Warriors and Steph, they could really get their verve back, but there are two super teams in LA. I mean, that's kind of the issue. I mean, a lot of it's the competition. Fuck, I can't believe I'm not scooping, it's not a report, but I'm totally giving up what I'm going to write about right now. It's like a fool, like an idiot. But I mean, the competition's a lot of it. I mean,
they're not playing plumbers.
Yeah, well, in the Last Dance, plumbers. I mean, some of these teams are really good. But I mean, that Sonics team kicks ass, but some of these other teams, I mean, they're already building up the Pacers with the violin music, as we said. And I mean, you know,
not great.
But are the LA teams that great? Like,
I was just going to say, I might have to push back on that.
Let's fast forward it a year. The Lakers are obviously Anthony Davis is entering his prime. LeBron will be 36. Who knows what that looks like? He's probably going
to. I don't know if they're super teams. I don't know.
But like the everyone else on that team is old.
You're kind of hoping that the Clippers, I don't know, have crazy locker room issues. And
right. They've been underwhelming. They're almost there. But I also
they're almost there. Don't worry.
Still think they're the best team. So.
Yeah,
but it's like PG. I mean, fine. Like, I don't know if they're super teams. Is my thing. And then we got the Giannis wild card. But
I mean, I'm with you. That. I'm with you on the concept that like just putting, you know, run of the mill NBA players around the Warriors, like three core guys, is probably not going to get it done.
Yeah, I think the Draymond thing.
Sure.
I mean, that's the big swing factor. And I don't see too much optimism from a lot of observers that's going to swing in the correct direction. But
when you say observers, are you talking just like smart NBA people?
I'm talking about internally in the organization.
Nick Wright.
If you heard Zach Lowe or somebody of that level of observation saying, I think Draymond's going to, you know, shoot 41% from three next year. Like, I'm not.
I'll not settle for
yeah, but what are we, but also what are we basing that off of? And how much does that really, like, he's not going to shoot 40%. So that shouldn't be what we're expecting, right? So, I mean, if he shoots 28% from three and then we extrapolate what he did in the regular season last year, then yeah, he's fucked. But right, but like, but I'm saying, like, then he's fucked, right? But
you don't want defenders sagging off of him and you want him to be the force that he was defensively. And these are the things that you want, because there's this other awkward issue with the team. And man, I can't believe we're going to this Warriors team right now in this pandemic where we don't even know.
We're not going to even see them play for 7 months, so no one's going to remember this.
Pascal and Draymond don't really mesh on the floor, so that's something to figure out. You know, that's a little bit. I mean,
but I'm not sure if either of them are good. So
I was going to say,
when I say good, I'm not sure either of them are
wins added, whatever. Like, I know what you're saying.
Good enough for you to consider them in your calculus of what you want to do.
I get that.
Much bigger issue if Draymond is not that player.
Yeah, but I think that we have more trust in Steph and Clay being what they were, but it's Draymond where you just don't know. And a lot of people are pessimistic based on what happened last season. I don't claim to be able to predict the future, but that's the big question.
Which is fair. I'm going to put my Homer hat on though, because Draymond was pretty good. He was pretty good, although I always have it on usually, at least in the last few years. He was pretty good at the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals. Like, he kind of got wrecked by Siakam a little bit, but he was still pretty good. Like, he was a top four, I would say, player and the NBA Finals, and that's a guy that
top four on the Warriors, yes,
on the floor. Because I also don't think Kawhi was that great in that series.
Kawhi was better than him. Siakam was better than him. Lowry was better than him. Steph and Clay were better than him.
Van Vliet
was probably better than him.
AD's
11 minutes were better.
Draymond was really good in that series. I disagree. Draymond was really good.
I mean,
I'd rather have him than Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet in the series.
He was a big part of the reason that Steph couldn't get a shot off when, you know, Clay was.
But we knew that.
That's a real thing. Like, what you're saying, you have to be honest with yourself, is he can be useful if you put amazing scorers around him. Which means they have to get amazing scores, which he limits their ability to do because he makes money that implies he can do something.
Well, first of all, there's already two of
them. I like harsh Sam. I like
harsh. Well, Sam's wanted Draymond out for a long time.
Watch him make a shot. I'm not down for yelling, running.
He's still the best player the team's had
out of town. And then just like, you know,
all right, now you're pulling an Andy. Now you're trolling.
No, I'm not. Like, the guy was going to leave.
And
sure. But.
And he brought him.
He's got to back it up if he's going to
He has backed. They've won three titles with him being an integral part of the team. He has backed it up. I think there's a part of him.
All I'm saying is, if I was a Lacob, beyond taking the free birthright trip, I would be considering trading him the minute he gets hot, instead of trying to ride some Draymond's back wave. Because
I also don't know who you can trade him for, though. Terrible. Who are you going to trade him for?
Well, right now, you're not trading him for anyone.
Well, I mean, right now, I'm not trading for Rudy Gobert. And I'm not trading him for Rudy Bogut. Well, then who would that be? You're going to trade him for Robert Covington?
Vivek. We've got a player for you, Vivek. It's tough.
That's the thing.
Hey, man, I got a Peloton, too. I'm not that impressed by his workout ethic, so I'm just saying.
It's just nonsense. Go shoot some threes instead of running on the treadmill. The guy's just nonstop on the bike. It's like, dude, that doesn't help your shooting.
Is this a Snapchat thing? Is this IG story? Because I'm not even aware of this. Like,
no, he.
Oh no, just like Marcus's. Marcus written stories on him. But like, it does seem like every 3 months we get a story about how Draymond is really committed to the spin bike.
They're good enough to win a championship is what I'm trying to say. They're good enough to win a championship. I don't think that saying
they can
that LA have
potentially win one of those gutty kind of ugly championships with veteran savvy. One of those, you know, I think about the Miami Heat beating the Mavericks in 2006 with the help of Bennett Salvatore. Oh,
like, so trade for Shaq midseason.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But Shaq, I mean, Shaq back then, well, in that title run, what was Shaq averaging in that finals? 12 a game?
He was putting up 20 plus before the finals. The finals, it was your point stands. He wasn't Shaq.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
I don't think there's a team that's really that great where you're gonna say, oh, that team's gonna beat the Warriors. Like, that's not happening. I don't think that's happening.
So we need to
here's the thing. The Warriors need to fill out the rest of the roster. I mean, we're talking about three guys. We're having a conversation about three guys. We're having a conversation about Draymond. I mean, they need other players. This roster from last season.
Steph Clay, Mike Mulder, Eric Paschal, Draymond were good.
There is a plausible argument to be made, and I really like Damian Lee, but there's a plausible claim to be made that he's their MVP from last season.
Yeah, he's horrible.
He like had to fight his way to being in the league. You know,
I would have taken 2019 Damian Lee on the last couple of Warriors teams
over Alphonso McKinney.
McKinney, Ian Clark. Yeah.
Okay, but whose fault is that, right? Because then there's a lot of, oh, we'll trade Draymond, do this, we'll do that. Whose fault is it that they can't figure out a fucking roster of people that they need to pick up? Alphonso McKinney is trash. Whose fault is it?
How much does Steph Curry make? How much does Klay Thompson make? How much does Draymond Green make?
They don't have the flexibility, generally. I mean,
yeah, but you still have to have the ability to develop and find players that are good.
Alphonso McKinney was a good find, you know, like with the flexibility they have.
Should have been Daniel House.
I mean, Daniel House is not a
better than McKinney.
Well, I mean, House is one of those players where I'm trying not to.
We're not going to talk about House versus McKinney anyway. But yeah, I feel
it's a very
like an hour and a half in. Go ahead.
Can you remember? Remember just the degree of food he was for KD? By the way, I mean, of course, anybody. Really can't guard.
He really shouldn't be guarding KD. That speaks more to the Rockets. But yes, your point stands.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a nice. It's the same caliber of player.
Yeah, but then again, you know, McKinney shouldn't be guarding Kawhi Leonard or whatever.
Right, didn't look any better.
The front office will have to find out. We will find out how good they are with what they have, the tools that they have.
I'm trying to help
draft pick both years.
I'm trying to.
No, but I mean,
they have the trade exception, Ethan. They have the trade exception. They have a lot of stuff that they can.
It does go like you. Okay, let's be honest with you here. Okay, Draymond makes $24 million a year starting next year. What does he realistically need to produce at? To justify being worth that.
30.
I mean, first of all,
you need to get above, you definitely need above 30% from three. I don't even know. I a lot of it's the defense. It's a combination,
but also
of defense and being able.
Defense and sticking open shot.
Like that's what needs to happen. I don't know when you say recoup, but when you say recoup value, it's so bloodless, Sam. I mean, this isn't somebody
because you've been paying him for past.
Yeah, this isn't a guy. This is a guy who probably gave them money back.
Yep.
Sure. He was worth more than whatever he got paid from 14 to 18, I guess.
But they've got a very complicated relationship with Draymond. You know, he's the heart of the team. He's, you know, the fans love him. And there's this deep love, but then there's also this sense of the kicking LeBron in the nuts and, you know, the whole deal. Like he's the Draymond saga. It's really quite incredible. But yeah, it's too much of an emotional attachment. Like this thing of to recoup the value. He's not some free agent that you signed off the street. You know, it's a different consideration. But point taken. It's a
I'm just saying steal. It's from
Let me put it this way: if he plays like he did last season, it's like one of the very onerous deals.
Well, yeah, I mean he's.
I meant more because there's a salary cap and there's all these financial like if it was baseball, I'd be like, so you're paying him double his value. Who cares? He's given you more than that, and you deal with it, right? But because basketball's finances are different, you kind of have to ask the difficult questions.
Yeah, no, I like how harsh you are. I'm into it. It's honest. It's the show that Scott Galloway does on Tech. No mercy, no malice. You know, it's no mercy, no malice. It's the Sam Asfandiari way of basketball assessment. I'm into it.
Yeah, I just find better players around these guys. They've won you enough games. Figure it out.
Don't blame
the guys that have got you there. Get them good players and help them win another.
You're also the dude who tries to pretend like Brandon Crawford was good and
Gold Glove shortstop.
So you want them to have these fines, but when they find Damian Lee like off the scrap heap, you're just calling him garbage. You're just calling him terrible.
By the way, Steph Curry found Damian Lee, so let's move on from that. That's a Steph product. Find me a guy that the actual team can develop and has found and figured out. My thing is, honestly, I think they can give excuses for the last few years because they just have had a great team. It for me, it's like, what are they going to do with the stuff that they have today? Two top draft picks and a trade exception. And then more money than any other owner that are willing to spend, right? Because you would assume Joe Lacob's going to want to spend more than anyone else. Hopefully. If not, that's another story. But that's a lot of stuff that they have that could convert to a few really good players, not just like random, you know, vet guys, right? Like
so this is the legitimate big question. This is the big question because I love draft picks. So I want them to get draft picks. I love watching the journey of a draft pick. I enjoy it.
So trade them. I know what you're going to say.
No. But, well, that is where I'm going. I can't logically defend making the pick given the timeline the team is on. I find it difficult to defend it logically. Like, for my own interest, I want to see these draft picks develop. That's what I want to see. Where are you guys on that? Do you just package the two picks? Is that where you're at?
Me and Sam have done this quite a bit. We've argued about this quite a bit, actually.
Doesn't it come down to, do you think they can, like, because if they want to get a big trade, they need every tool at their disposal, right?
Yeah.
So are you better suited kind of pulling the Celtics type thing where you're trying to develop and probably lowering your ceiling, waiting for that big move that may never come, or throwing it into something and then, like, you know, maybe Joel Embiid asked to get out and by then you don't have anything to give for him?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it has to do
that's why we're not getting paid to do it.
Yeah. A lot of it has to do with your intel. A lot of it has to do with your intel and knowing who might want to go where and if they want to actually play with you. And I mean, how crazy would it be if Giannis, and I don't think this is going to happen, what if Giannis just said, it's the Warriors, it's only the Warriors, trade me to the Warriors. Yeah. There's no other option. There's no leverage. Yeah.
Like AD, right? Like
yeah,
AD.
Like that would be interesting. Well, you know, AD, there is still that sense of, well, maybe we could send him here or there. I mean, that situation would be – interesting. That would be very, it would be bad for the league probably, but it would be interesting.
Giannis, Giannis
interesting's a lot of thing, but how likely is interesting?
Interesting.
I mean, I don't, Giannis is somebody I've never met in my life. You know, I know some people who know him, but like, I don't really want to speculate on that just because he's just somebody I don't know. I don't have a bead on. I don't know if he's somebody who's completely cool with a lot of people hating him or having something against him. You know, I don't, because that's what you need. I wouldn't have known that Anthony Davis could have carried out that whole thing that ultimately worked out for him, but he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now nobody. And so we've had this kind of, Sam and I had this kind of back and forth where it's like, then do you try and package that pick with what you can and get someone like Josh Richardson or Marcus Smart, these names that Slater has thrown up using the trade exception.
I'm not into the Marcus Smart thing. I love Marcus Smart. I love Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart and Draymond, and like, it's just...
Well, yes! Like, yes! Nothing makes me happier.
No, Marcus Smart, I love Marcus Smart as a player, but guards who go balls to the wall defensively are some of my favorite players. But the ones with a shaky shot, they tend to get hurt a lot. They tend to burn out.
Him and Draymond are out of the league in like 2 years when they're on the same team.
Ethan's just speculating until playoffs where, you know, Marcus Smart has a torn labrum and Draymond's knees hurt and it's Steph, Clay, McKinney,
and Quinn Killian, Cook. And Killian Hayes. And Killian Hayes is scoring 20 a game, 20 and 10 for Brad Stevens.
Oh, all right. Well, let's get out. What's your next book going to be on? Let's get out of here with that. What's your what's the next one going to be titled? What's it going to be on?
Might be on tech. Might be local local tech scene. And beyond that, I'm not sure. I'm doing some sort of let's say preliminary feelers on what it might be. But right now, given the current circumstances, it's hard to. It's just hard to get moving on some things.
It's hard to work.
Yeah. Yeah, it might not be basketball. It might be basketball. It might not be basketball.
So Slate, Ethan, is coming back. Or where did you used to? Was it Slate or?
No, was the worst one. It was the worst one.
The Slate.
It was the worst one. No, I
forget which one.
I kind of feel like I have one more basketball book in me. And then maybe something else, but ultimately I'm just really lucky and fortunate if I get to write another book. And that was what I was mostly terrified with this whole thing was, is this going to bomb and nobody's going to read it? And then I'll never get another shot. At the very least that hasn't happened. So I feel like I have permission to do another one. So, you know,
people love you. Come on, stop it.
Stop it.
And then they'll hate you and then they'll love you.
You're the voice of the fan. People love you.
This is why I need why you need the worst to make the right pick. You're like,
my book.
I need a good book. I need you guys to not fuck this up.
Oh, man.
Ethan Strauss. All right, man. Stay safe, please.
Appreciate it, sir.
Yep. All right, brother.
All right. See you guys.